I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today we discuss housing. The Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk is now in its 21st year. The seven-day walk from Provincetown to Falmouth raises awareness and money for Cape Cod housing agencies. We'll talk about the walk, the different housing assistance services available, and how these agencies work collaboratively to keep Cape and Islands residents in safe and affordable homes. Joining us in studio this morning, Don Jenkins, volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Mindy.
Allison Elwine, who's Vice President of Operations at HAC. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mindy.
And then joining us on the phone is Bob Murray, who for 16 years was Executive Director of the Falmouth Housing Authority. He's the founder of the Housing with Love Walk. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Mindy.
Bob, give us a little bit of history about the walk.
Well, we started the walk, 21 years ago in response to legislation that had passed that would provide, it was a positive piece of legislation that provided about $300,000 a year to house families in houses rather than motels. We found that that was much cheaper. The state agreed with that. And that pilot program lasted for about 15 years, and HAC managed it. And shortly after we had got that through the legislature, I accepted the job in Falmouth and said, I can't leave HAC with this $100,000 liability because there was a $100,000 match attached to it. So I did the first walk, and that's how it began. In the next couple of years, the take went down, so I said, we got to do something to liven this up. And what we did is we expanded it and invited other housing agencies in, showed them how to raise money, and each housing agency gets to keep what they raise. But it's been much more successful as a collaborative effort than it ever was as a single event.
Okay, this is a long walk, Provincetown to Falmouth. How many years have you walked the entire route, Bob?
I stopped 2 years ago, so about 19 years I've done.
Wow. And how do you prepare for something like that?
I used to kid people. I said, I train as I go. Because I never had time.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's... So are there many people who do walk the entire route?
No. Each year we have maybe three or four.
Wow. I guess that would be... You'd be saying something if you can walk that entire route like you have, Bob's, for so many years.
It's tough. It's a tough grind.
Yeah.
So, and it's also a major time commitment.
Right.
You know, yeah. 7 days.
Well, another aspect to this walk, along with raising money for housing agencies, is the fellowship. A lot of people come back year after year. Is that right? You've got some people who've done this since the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And some of the older folks that have walked the whole thing 6, 7, 8 times, they're still coming back. Mm. And it's because of that fellowship.
Yeah. And Don and Allison, I know you both are involved in the walk. Talk about what your experience is like.
Well, first, Bob, and you know that when Bob says do it, you just join in, and it's gonna work because that's what happens. So most of what I have done and HAC has done in terms of the walk is to start in Yarmouth. Meet them about halfway, and then various ones of us sort of relay from Yarmouth on. In the early years, a couple of my staff and I would start at St. Pius with Bob at the Mass, and then we would do collections at the door and then, join up with the walk as far as we could go. We did lunches. We did those kinds of things. But the joy of it is... that that every step of this walk is keeping somebody housed, giving them the opportunity for safe and affordable housing.
Yeah. Don, how did you get involved?
So this is my first year involved in this.
Actually. Oh, it is.
I recently retired. I was involved with the Homeless Prevention Council some years ago, and I was looking for an opportunity to do something like this to help out with it. And so I'm going to start in Provincetown because I live in New Orleans. And I'll see how far I get. I'm hoping to get as far as Chatham.
That's funny. So, Bob, you answered one of the questions I had, which was how is the money raised divided between, there's about a dozen or so housing agencies. So tell us how it works. The agencies have people who walk for them and raise money. What is it per day, per month? How does that work?
Well, yeah, each agency will solicit sponsors, solicit donations. So a lot of their money gets raised even before the walk starts. And we felt that there was much more incentive if agencies were able to keep what they raised. And so that's worked pretty well. So if an agency comes in, they pay $175 initiation fee, and that pays for the printing of the 15,000 walk brochures. And those get distributed through the churches and through Stop and Shop. Stop and Shop has been excellent over the years, great sponsor. They have the walk hands at the counters. And every year we take in $8,000 or $9,000 from those walk hands. And it's a nice little extra bonus. But the agencies themselves, we just say, this is how you can raise money. Try this, try that. And if it works, they make a few extra dollars. Yeah. And, you know, it all goes to housing, so it really doesn't matter who raises what, because we're all in this thing together, and it's not a, I got to do more better than them, or I got to do more than them. No, it's not that way at all. That's the one thing that's nice about this. There's a great collaboration that has developed amongst these agencies that throughout the year, any agency that participates in this walk can call any other agency that participates in it and get help with a case that's too big for them.
Right. And Allison, you can speak to that collaborative effort. I mean, this is really more and more agencies are kind of joining forces.
We've always been good on the Cape in terms of our collaboration. It has been really a state model. We've gone to lots of state meetings where we're told we don't even talk to the person down the street. We've always done that, but we have formalized this more over the last 20 years, which probably sounds like a lifetime to some of your listeners, but to some of us it went very quickly. In more recent years, have formed the Network to Address Homelessness, which has an executive committee of, I believe there's seven of us, and then a policy board that includes not only service agencies, but business and the political arena, so that we are all connected. And we hear, you know, what the business community has to say or to offer, they hear, and so we can all work more together to the same goal of seeing that people who live and work on Cape Cod can have safe, affordable housing.
Right. We're talking about housing. If you'd like to join our conversation, perhaps you've walked the walk, you want to share your story, or you have a housing question or story for us, 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. And I guess I should have said at the top of the show, but full disclosure, I do sit on the NOAA Telethon Steering Committee, so just so that's out there. And I have not taken part in the walk before, but this year I am. So, Don, I'll be with you being one of the, this being my first year as well. Bob, you've been a tireless advocate for people in need. And I'm wondering how you think the landscape has changed in this area of affordable housing in the last decade or so, or has it changed?
We are a society that wants instant solutions. And if it had been at something for 20 years and it's not fixed, what's wrong with your program? But the poor are going to be with us for a long time. And the whole economic situation, really, especially on the Cape, makes it impossible for people who are in minimum wage jobs to afford to live here. Mm-hmm. You have to work something like 90 hours a week at a minimum wage job to afford a median rent. Well, how many people can do that and still raise a family? So it becomes, for a lot of people, just impossible. Mm-hmm. And then if you've got a situation where you're trying to pay for daycare so you can work, that just takes more off the top. So it becomes a very, very difficult situation for lots of families. And lots of families need some small subsidy. And we're seeing more of that over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years with walk money and some agencies providing a small, shallow subsidy of up to a couple of $100 a month. But then you'd be amazed. Sometimes that's all it takes to keep a family housed and keep them stable. And you know, when a family is stable and kids are stable in housing, good things happen. I mean, they learn better, they get better nutrition, just good things happen. It's well worth the investment.
Don?
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. Some 15% of the children that live on Cape Cod are living below the poverty line, which is surprising. We think about the Cape as this idyllic place with all the beautiful houses, and it is a beautiful place, but a lot of the families that are here especially with a service economy, do not earn enough to really have a – to be able to afford their life. Mm-hmm. It's on typical two-bedroom apartment in Barnstable County – to work a 40-hour week and afford that apartment, you'd have to make $24.37 an hour. The average wage for a renter on Cape Cod is $10.67 an hour.
Oh.
So typically, that's where Bob got the 91 hours from. It's typical that if both members of a both parents of a family work and still struggle to get into a small apartment. And then you get the situation when a child is sick, you can't go to work, and then things happen like that. And people really find it very quickly, they find themselves falling behind.
Right. And if you can find an apartment, I mean, we don't exactly have a lot of available apartments.
We don't have affordable apartments.
Right.
There are people that come to HAC looking for apartments, and they make a good deal less money than any one of us at this table, and yet the only way, the only thing available to them is a rent that I wouldn't even consider.
Mm-hmm.
But they... they do it, they juggle, and then they get behind, say, with an electric bill. Or, as Don was pointing out, it's the little regular life bumps in the road that cause the problem. For many of us, a car repair is inconvenient, and we rail about what it costs, but it does not change our lives. For a lot of the families we serve, it's life-changing.
Mm-hmm, right.
So you spend $400 to repair a car so that you can get to work, but then you can't pay your electric bill or you are going to fall behind in the rent. Most landlords are not going to take a partial payment, so you get behind a little and then you get behind a lot, and it's a snowball.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there's an example of that that you guys helped out of. Family with two young kids, and the youngest was born premature, had some fairly serious medical, sort of ongoing medical issues. And although both parents work, this past December, their little boy had to go into Boston for testing and was there for a while, and the mom had to go with him, and she couldn't work. She didn't have an income, and they couldn't make their rent that month, and they had to turn to Allison's Housing Assistance Corp for help. But another interesting data point that Bob mentioned, it's an average engagement to keep a family in a home is $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked about helping get a car fixed or making 1 month's payment. If a family loses their home and ends up in a shelter, they typically spend 6 months there. The cost to the state then is $20,000 plus. So
right.
It's much more cost effective to help a family stay in their home than to deal with them if they've lost their home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, the human cost of the disruption and the stress and everything of losing your home.
Well, it's interesting when you're talking about the rental market here. I was talking to a guy that's working at a gas station here, and he comes from off Cape. He comes, I think, from Rhode Island. Quite a drive. And I said, really? Well, he said, I can't find. He's a single dad. Mm-hmm. I think he said he was paying $800 a month for his apartment in Rhode Island, which includes everything, heat and all of that. Can you imagine finding something like that around here?
Yeah. That is unheard of on the Cape today.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Bob, I know a lot of people know about Bob's work, but Bob, you were a big key player in the development of Fair Winds Apartments, and you've developed housing for low-income families. Lots of places here in Gifford Street, the Edgerton Drive house. You've worked on some other projects here in town. Are you still involved in trying to get some? I know you were doing something in the T-Ticket area for housing for the disabled and elderly. What else are you working on?
We just got funded last week. Funding last week for 11 units in Woods Hole.
First
affordable housing in Woods Hole.
Fantastic. That's great. I hadn't heard that. Yeah. Wow.
We were a long time at it, but we did get funded.
Yeah.
So we were really excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. What about housing for young people, Bob? What are your thoughts on that? You know, I have to say every time, you know, we see it, when we saw that affordable housing go up there next to Stop and Shop in the T-Ticket area, my daughter said, for seniors again, there's never anything for young people.
Let me explain to you why that it was. In order to put that parcel together, we got HUD to give us 3.5 acres of the land from that elderly project there. And so we didn't think it was fair then to do anything but near elderly on the new site, mm-hmm. because that was really elderly land. And so that's why that project was for the near elderly.
Yeah.
But that's the only project of ours that's it's like that. Everything else is open to everybody.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, but it seems like we do need some sort of affordable rental units for young, because not all young people want to buy, even if they could afford to buy. You know, how many of us when we were, 20-something bought our houses?
Absolutely.
One of the things we need to do is we need to have some discussion about public policy and about the size of units. The state says you can't, if you're going to build affordable housing, the one bedrooms have to be a minimum of 650 square feet, and the two bedrooms have to be a minimum of 900 square feet. Well, that's pretty large.
Yeah.
And when you figure that they're selling condos in Manhattan at 300 and 350 square feet and having no problem selling them, something's wrong with that picture. And you can build a lot more units if you're building, instead of a 650 square foot one bedroom, if you were building a 400 or 450 square foot one bedroom. Yeah, it's not as spacious, but if it's well designed, it can work.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper to heat, it's cheaper to build, it's cheaper all the way around, and it provides good, stable housing.
Yeah.
But that's a conversation that we need to have with state agencies and the policymakers, because it would help produce a lot of housing at a size that's adequate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine there are several conversations we could have on the policy level, right, Allison?
Absolutely. And Bob has pointed out earlier that not only the size of the unit, but the time it takes to get some of these things on the ground.
Yeah.
I don't consider Bob a particularly patient person, but I'm less patient. And with all the pushing and shoving and moving and talking and negotiating that Bob and others have done, I've seen projects take 5+ years. And that's just too long.
Right.
It's ridiculous. And pointing out the smaller units, that's the wave of the future anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And for us not to be able to do those kinds of things so that people do have a safe, affordable place to live their lives, it makes, societally, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Bob, just take single people. Perhaps a woman stays in an unsafe marriage because she can't afford a 650 square foot one bedroom apartment. But she could afford a 450 square foot apartment if it was $250 a month less. But so for all kinds of reasons, we ought to be doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It should be safer. Her life would be better, and we'd have the housing.
Yeah. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple of statistics along those lines. The state has a guideline of 10% as a target for affordable housing. Here on Cape Cod, we're less than half of that. So we could double the number of affordable housing units and only then bring ourselves up to what the state thinks we should, where we should be. And there are about 5,100 units today. And we have a waiting list of 4,000 people waiting over and above that. So we really are running at about half the affordable housing that we, and thanks to Bob and Allison's efforts, are trying to get there. But another sort of data point for folks to think about, the average housing cost on the Cape is 11% higher than the state average. Well, you can imagine that with all the beautiful homes here. And wages are 32% below the state average. So you can get a sense of the disconnect that Allison was talking about. People can't. The people working on landscaping or waitress or something like that, they're going to have a real hard time finding a safe place to live.
Right. Bob, I know you have to run. Do you have any final thoughts for us before we let you go?
No, I just want to thank you and NPR for doing this, because I think one of the things that this walk does is it really does get the message out. And we've been doing that now for 21 years, but it gets out because of the media. And the media like NPR and others every year come forward and really help us spread this message. And, you wonder if it's doing any good, but each year this thing raises $250,000, and over the life of it, it's raised just under $4 million. So that's a lot of private money that's gone towards helping people with their housing.
Yeah. Bob Murray, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Your time. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about housing with Allison Elwine, Vice President of Operations at HAC, and Don Jenkins, a volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. And one of the issues we're sort of touching on here is comes to funding. Most of the state money goes to housing for the homeless, not prevention programs. And we've been talking about the difference in costs. Considering it is so much more cost effective to keep people housed than it is to get them housing after they become homeless, this sort of seems like a disconnect.
It is a huge disconnect. It has been a disconnect through administration after administration in this state. It's like we start over every time we elect a new administration. Due to the efforts of people like Bob Murray and Rick Presbry and Paul Hebert, we have continued on the Cape to have prevention programs regardless of what the state has done. And as Don pointed out, you can save housing. And I don't, he didn't mean $1,500 a month. He meant $1,500 period.
One time. Yeah.
One time. Right. And it costs a minimum of $100 a night to place somebody in a shelter, a motel, which is sinful. That's a whole nother topic there, placing families in motels. But we have not done that on the Cape in the last 20 years. And our homeless population, people on the Cape and islands, are not becoming homeless at the rate of the rest of the state. In fact, we have eliminated shelter beds, and we now have, at any given time, about half the people in our family shelters here on the Cape are not from the Cape and Islands. And I credit prevention programs for that. Mm-hmm. If you can intercede to help somebody get into an affordable unit for them, or you can help them get over that bump in the road for as little as $1,500 total. And this often means several of our agencies coming together to put the $1,500 on the plate. You've done it. Mm-hmm. But the state argues with us about that and then congratulates us for it and then says it, you know. So it becomes difficult.
Yeah. So what do we have in terms of homeless prevention programs then?
Well, HAC has been a leader in that for a number of years mostly through these ecumenical councils. Mm-hmm. The state comes around every now and then with a program. The name is RAFT, Rental Assistance for Families in Transition. That program also keeps transitioning, mm-hmm. so it's never the same year after year, but it doesn't begin to touch the issue. So the private donations, the ecumenical councils, they're the ones that keep that going.
Where would we be without that faith community?
I don't think we'd be. Mm. I think we would have full shelters from people who live on the Cape and need more, because mm-hmm. the bump in the road is what starts the decline.
Yeah.
And once you spiral into homelessness, after 3 weeks of homelessness, you're more likely to remain homeless for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, some examples of this. And we have a lot of cases where elderly folks find themselves in dire straits. And often don't know where to turn. There's an example, and I hear a lot of this through our friends at Homeless Prevention Council, but they reach out often to the food pantry, to the Housing Assistance Corp. Elderly folks living in campers, you know, couch surfing, just don't know where to turn. Oftentimes it doesn't cost much just to get them through the process into affordable housing. There's an example of a former teacher who lost her partner, could no longer afford her house, and so she's staring at foreclosure. And actually, the homeless prevention caseworker got her involved with Housing Assistance Corp, who worked through a short sale. Then they worked through the process of getting her into senior housing, and there was quite an emotional process of leaving her home, and the caseworker stayed with her through all of that. So, and oftentimes it's not about money so much as it's helping people figure out what do I do.
Absolutely. A lot of people who the kinds of things that you're illustrating, Don, have never been a part of any system. Mm-hmm. So they don't know where to go. Things get really bad. They finally realize they can't handle this alone. They go to someone like Wondrous Homeless Prevention Council on the Lower Cape. And then, because we've all done this for a long time, you know, we put the pieces together, the foreclosure counseling that led to the short sale, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And despite the feeling that housing going up is for seniors, that's continues to be long list right. of waiting too. And when somebody comes into our office, they're 70 plus years old. They've never done any of this. Sometimes raising their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. I adore my grandchildren. Right. God help me if I had to raise them.
Right.
But you know, here they are.
Yeah.
And we as a community have to have an answer for that, as well as for the struggling young parents and so on.
Yeah. You bring up a good point about the housing going up for seniors. And when I mentioned that to Bob, not that I don't think we need housing for seniors, we do, but we also need housing for young people. I just want to make sure
Absolutely.
Nobody was misunderstanding my point there. So we're talking about foreclosures. Let's talk about this for a moment. What kinds of services? We're talking about this woman who you ended up giving a short sale. Some people you're able to help stay in their homes. Some people, that's not just not an option.
Right.
So talk about the services and
what
you're
seeing. Well, the foreclosure counseling department at HAC grows out of our education department. And education is so vitally important in this whole arena of housing. We have ongoing workshops for first-time home buyers, workshops for new homeowners, workshops for dealing with the foreclosure issues, workshops for credit repair mm-hmm. so that you can get into housing. These are ongoing things all the time, and I encourage folks to go to our website, HAC, oncapecod.org. If you can't do it, talk to your grandchildren. They'll get you there.
Or go to our website if you're familiar with it.
Wonderful.
We'll put a link, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there are so many possibilities, and in the earlier days, of foreclosure, eight or more years ago, there were so many hoops to jump through. It was absolutely unreal to get a modification so that you could stay in your home, and more it was how to get through the foreclosure process. We are now, because the banks and the government have figured out what we figured out a long time ago, we are able to do more of the modifications, do them more quickly. The local banks have been wonderful. Unfortunately, there are too few of those. But at any rate, so through HAC's foreclosure counseling and education department, we will walk you through those processes.
Right.
Yeah, just a couple of points. Foreclosure affects renters too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
There's a single mom lived in the same house for 12 years, and the owner told her the house is being foreclosed, that she had to move. And she worked. She could afford rent, but she didn't have the
up front, first, last in security.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just want to mention St. Vincent de Paul, because they were the ones that happened to help this individual. And this is another example where $1,500 got her mm-hmm. where she needed to be. But foreclosure affects the renters, too. That's right. Uprooting for them as well.
Very important point,
and I think
Don.
The key, too, here is not to wait until you're 4, 5, 6 months behind.
Right.
You want to get on this early enough that the earlier in the process you can get on this, is the better, correct?
It is correct, except that, unfortunately, you have to be 3 months behind for some of these things to work.
Oh my.
But I don't want to speak to that. I want Cheryl Kramer at our office. You contact her, mm-hmm. and Cheryl will get you on the right track with the right person.
All right. On your website, there are often stories from clients, and one you have up there now is from Kristen, who's a single
yes.
mom. And I love the quote. She says, "When I first came here, I had so much guilt and shame. The biggest thing HAC has given me is hope." And I would imagine that is probably true for a lot of people who
Absolutely.
Come looking for help.
People come to us, and they are desperate and desolate. And sometimes they've gone here or there and not been treated as well as we would hope, mostly because those of us in this business, we get frustrated too with what we can't do. But people come to us and we make it a point to do everything we can and to treat people with dignity and respect. Come in, see what your options are, not just what HAC has to offer, but what the community has to offer. Don mentioned St. Vincent de Paul. Oh, God bless St. Vincent de Paul. St. Vincent de Paul, the Needy Fund, all the pantries, the network that we're in to say, as was pointed out earlier, we can do this for you, but they can do that for you, and mm-hmm. we will put together this $1,500 or whatever it takes in order to prevent your becoming homeless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. What about when we're looking at, you know, affordable housing? There are many factors that play into it. So obviously, there's not a single answer to solving the affordable housing issue. Are we able? You're talking about these collaborations, which are really fantastic. But are we able to think outside the box and come up with creative solutions along the way here?
I think Bob is telling us that with the policy piece.
Yeah, right.
We've really got to do that kind of thing. The traditional so-called affordable housing, quite honestly, is not affordable to our folks coming out of shelter, for mm-hmm. example. $800 a month for a tax credit unit is fantastic on the Cape. There are not enough of those, and people coming out of shelter can't afford that. Mm-hmm. So we really have to. The shallow subsidy piece that Bob talked about, and we love to talk about shallow subsidies. The state has not been real thrilled with that over the years. But when they look at the fact that somebody can literally be kept housed for $100 or $200 added to their income a month, we therefore pay the landlord that $100 or $200 a month, 6 months, sometimes a little bit longer, and the family's on their way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're still struggling. If you're a young family working at a service position or even a teacher or nurse or even doctors are having trouble coming here because of the housing costs. Right. So at any rate, those little assists help. And because most of our prevention money comes from private donations, we don't have the income limit mm-hmm. to be at below the poverty level to get help. It's people who are hanging on by their fingernails working in the service industry who are getting the most of this assistance, as well as Don pointed out, a lot of people can pay the rent. But when you need three times that rent right. to get into a new unit, I'd have trouble coming up with that.
Yeah,
it's a good example of that. A woman, Rebecca, she grew up on the Cape. She joined the Marines. She was one of the unit that was a first responder at the Haiti earthquake. And when she was discharged, she had an injury. When she was discharged, she had some benefits. She signed up at Cape Cod Community, got a job, but she couldn't afford the first and last month's rent, so she's living in her grandmother's house with her little daughter in one room. I slept with my one-year-old in one room. I can tell you that's
not fun.
Not
yeah.
But what she needed was a chance to get the first and last month's rent to get into apartments. So the Harwich Ecumenical Council helped her out with that. Mm. In other words, it doesn't cost a lot to get her where she needed to be, but another outside-the-box example has to do with oftentimes people are living in these summer cottages that haven't been winterized. Mm-hmm. And there was an example, an elderly woman, she'd been a waitress for 40 years living in this same house, but she couldn't afford to live there because it was so cold in the winter she couldn't pay the heat. But there's a program called Housing Rehab, is that right, Allison?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know if the funding comes through the energy
yes.
Renewal, but the money can be provided to improve the energy efficiency of the house, to mm-hmm. fix the windows, et cetera. There's a large outreach by the Harwich Ecumenical Council and Harwich and Dennis for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she could stay in the house she was in and she could afford to stay there because she could make it more weatherproof. And that's right. That's a big...
The weatherization piece is vital. And it is, I call it the best and most unsung program.
And we're going to talk about that program right after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about affordable housing with Allison Elwine, Vice President of Operations at HAC, and Don Jenkins, a volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Before the break, we start to weatherization. So weather is this the energy assessment, the weatherization programs, Allison,
yes.
these are really helpful to a lot of
these
folks.
These are fabulous programs at HAC, and everybody, literally every person living on Cape Cod or Dukes County, Barnstable or Dukes County, is eligible for an energy audit.
Free.
We just... You actually pay for it through your electric bill without even noticing it every month. I didn't even know I did that. Mm-hmm. At any rate, you can get this energy audit. Then there are many, many services that would be available to you to weatherize your home. And the best way to find out all about that is to go on HAC's website, hackoncapecod.org, or to go to Cape Light Compact. Their website will explain some of the programs. I don't want to go into too much detail. It's not really my arena. I don't want to give any incorrect information. But a lot of the programs, people assume that because we are Housing Assistance Corporation are for low-income families and individuals. Actually, this program, as well as many others of ours, serve the entire community. Mm-hmm. So at the very least, call and call now.
Yeah.
Don't wait till October and November.
You'll be in that waiting list.
Yes,
yeah.
You will be on a long waiting list. But if you call now, not only can you get the audit and get weatherization in your home, we think of that as to stay warm in winter, but it'll keep you cool in the mm-hmm. summer too.
Right.
There are so many things that the energy programs at HAC can do for you. There are even refrigerator replacement programs. So,
or heating system upgrades, but that is dependent on income, though.
That is somewhat income dependent. But for example, a family of four making $60,000 is eligible.
Wow.
And that's on Cape, a pretty high income.
Yeah.
So you need to call in and call extension 123. Pretty easy to remember, even for me. Call and speak with Mitzi at extension 123, and she will guide you to where you need to go to get weatherization to improve your housing and make better use of your income.
Earlier, Don was giving us some of those statistics on how expensive our housing is and wages relatively low. With this dip that we saw in home prices, I know they're kind of on the rise again. Did that make housing any more affordable for some young families who wanted to be here? Or, I mean, I guess getting the loans, you're shaking your head, no. Getting a loan was a lot tighter. So that really didn't have much of an impact.
Not with most of the populations at 30%, say, of area median income, 30 to 50% of area median income. There just wasn't, for one thing, although selling prices went down, rental prices in a lot of cases went up.
Yeah,
people were trying to save their home mm-hmm. from foreclosure, and one way to do that is to raise the rent on your present tenant, so on and so on.
Right.
It's one other way, just to another twist on that. When the economy gets soft, a lot of the service jobs are minimized, I mm-hmm. guess I'd call it that. That 15% of children living under the poverty level is 58% more than it was at 2000. Mm. So over the last dozen years, that number's gone up 58%. The funding from the funding, other than privately raised, but state funding that goes toward homeless prevention, et cetera, hasn't changed in that
right.
time.
Yeah. What about the seasonal worker? You, in the break, Don, you were mentioning there's some people who are working two and three jobs through the summer, and then, whoops, come winter, you know, the money starts dwindling, and then you get into the middle of winter and they have no money left.
Well, I think I'd like to talk about the example that you gave me when I was banging around. There's a couple from Martha's Vineyard, and the dad was laid off in the boatyard there in December when the work ended, and he got part-time work, but he couldn't keep up with rent, et cetera. And so two things happened. First, their heat was shut off, And I think that may have led to the children's illnesses.
Yeah.
And the kids ended up in Mass General with, I'm not sure what
respiratory issues.
And then eventually they were evicted. So now they're out and their kids are sick. So the kids are in Mass General and the parents are sleeping in his room, their room, because they didn't have any other place to be. And you mentioned RAFT, the funding for...
It's Residential Assistance for Families in Transition. Right. And that money, as you know, has run out
for
the
that
year.
That was right at the wrong time because the money that HAC could have helped them with wasn't there. And so this has been a struggle. You were telling me about it when I first met you and that this is an example where the safety net has holes in it.
But so what happens to the family?
Well, what eventually happened, and we... This is our last resort kind of answer. But they eventually went into shelter. They are presently sheltered with us. They are in one of our scattered site units, which means they're in a small apartment. Dad is taking work when he can get it. Both parents in this household are college educated and have just fallen through the cracks. We are helping to keep the family together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there are so many people, you know, and I think this might be one of the reasons why we see so much, especially from the faith community and private donations, is because there's a lot of people living here paycheck to paycheck. And
absolutely.
You look at these stories, you hear these stories, and you think, that could be me. You know, you have, you know, an illness in the family, a divorce. I mean, there's so many, as you were calling those little bumps in the road, that most of us, it doesn't change our lives. But for many people, it is life-changing.
Totally,
and you find yourself, at some of the seniors we're talking about, who've been in their homes for, you know, many, many, many years, and then they're facing homelessness. What a scary situation to be in.
Horrible. Just horrible. And frankly, I think a disgrace to us as a state and a country. And I'm proud to say that Massachusetts is a state that does a great job at looking after its citizens. But there's a lot more to do.
Like the holes in the safety net that Don's talking about. But also, and I think you brought this up earlier, Don, one of the things, especially for someone who's never sought any help anywhere, they may not realize that there is some help out there for them. And you probably, Allison, should talk about the Housing Consumer Education Center. Any of those questions?
We have at HAC, Housing Consumer Education Center, which is a high-flown wording for a one-person department. But the person is there to answer the phone at extension 210 to guide people to the appropriate resource, whether it is in HAC or outside of HAC. So if you've got a housing issue and you just want to explore, is there something I can do? We will, that phone will be answered, 210, and that person will, that's Liz, and she will direct you to the in-house or community resource that might best resolve your issue.
And this is also going back to that collaboration, if you will, among agencies, the food pantries. I know we've done a number of programs on what the food pantries are seeing in demand.
Absolutely.
And people who were once donating to the food pantry now coming
to
get help from the food pantry. And they do a marvelous job of keeping
they
people in touch with other areas of help. Because obviously, if you can help them, say, pay their electric bill, or, you know, it's money they could be spending on food, or the opposite, if you've got this food from the pantry, maybe you can pay the electric bill.
And when you find, when we have such close relationships also with the utility folks, that when somebody at the utility sees a family that the bill keeps going up, 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 or they see them as repeaters in those kinds of things, they might say, you know, you need to call HAC and get an energy audit, for example, because then you can, as Don was pointing out with the person earlier, you then can pay your utilities. Right. Now, as a community, we meet together and talk together about who can do what the best. We really don't hassle over or compete with each other. Well, I'm going for this grant and you're going for this grant. We sit down together and we say, who can best serve this community need? And that person or that group or that collaboration will go for the grant to help the whole community.
Well, you just said the key word, because I think especially as money gets tighter, these people giving out the grants want to see collaboration. So
Absolutely.
When you have a couple of organizations coming together and saying, we want to do this, you're more likely to get that grant as a group than you are alone anyway.
Yeah, Bob told me something very interesting, and I hope I'm accurate in my – back when there was a state grant that lasted until some years ago, I think.
Yeah, Barnstable County Pilot Prevention Program.
And this was the only area, the Cape is the only area in the state that did two things. First of all, collaborated in how the money was shared, and also matched the funds with privately raised money.
Exactly.
And Bob had quite a few words with the state about, okay, if you're going to let this grant die, you should keep it going for us because look what we're doing with
it,
right? But he wasn't successful.
Well, you know, that whole idea, every time we would go to some meeting in the state and our prevention program would come to the fore, and we would talk about privately raised money, and everybody would back off. If you buy groceries, and I just really don't know anybody who doesn't, but if you buy groceries, you can help prevent homelessness. It won't cost you a dime, and you need to go on our website and find out how to do that. It costs you nothing. You help prevent homelessness.
Right. And then you were mentioned that there's the DY Ecumenical
Society. The Dennis Yarmouth Ecumenical Council for the Prevention of Homelessness, which is really much wider than DY Ec, than Dennis Yarmouth. At any rate, tomorrow night at the 99 restaurant on Berry Ave, right off of Route 28 in West Yarmouth, the 99 is working with us for a fundraiser. And if you take with you one of the coupons, which you can find on our website, they will donate 15% of your tab to DYEC, and DYEC that money will come to HAC to our prevention program.
Right. And we should now the walk, which is coming up, it starts Monday, July 15th in Provincetown, ends Sunday, July 22nd in Falmouth. We mentioned about a dozen or so agencies that this benefits. Just going to say Cape Cod Council of Churches, right. Homeless Services Continuum, Champ Homes, Chatham Ecumenical Council for the Homeless, Community Development Partnership, Falmouth Homeless Prevention Program, Friends of Prisoners, and Habitat for Humanity, Harwich Ecumenical, Homeless Not Hopeless, Homeless Prevention Council, and the St. Vincent de Paul Society. So that's a whole big group of folks that are working on this project. So for folks who went, I don't know where I was, but I didn't hear about this walk. Again, we'll put a link up on the website. But Don, what's involved? You anybody can walk in this, right?
I think anyone can walk in it. And I think it probably the best way would be to contact any one of these organizations and walk on their behalf.
Yep.
And anyone who wants to can participate, and anyone that wants to can contribute.
Right. And the network to address homelessness is also a part of this walk. And if you don't really have a particular connection and you just want to raise some money and for this cause, come on, walk with us. We're starting at the CVS on 28 in West Yarmouth on that Thursday, I believe. And I don't have anything in front of me telling me what date that is. But again, the websites will tell you that. 18th. Thank you. Come on and join in the walk at any point. And you know, anybody out there who wants to send any of us any money for this, you just feel free to do that and know that it will be well used and shared. 100% of this money goes to help people.
Yeah. So this is all for prevention pretty much programs.
Yes.
Most of this money that's raised from this walk. All right. Allison Elwine, Vice President of Operations at the Housing Assistance Corporation, and Don Jenkins, volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. Thank you both for being here today.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you, Mandy.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to Bob Murray, the founder of the Housing with Love Walk, who for many years was Executive Director of the Falmouth Housing Authority. I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is Executive Producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.